I'm going to ask each of you to take two pieces of paper from this bag, and you're going to give them to two people you don't know. And so that will be your gift of kindness today. Two. Once you have your two, yep, nobody can take you two. Okay, so once you have your two, you can go ahead and get up and give them to two people you don't know. And two. Nope, keep one more. You are going to give someone the gift of kind words.
You can read them before you get them, right?
You can go right now on your way. On your way to your. Okay. Here they go. Here they go.
But you know David. You know Mikey.
Thank you.
All right, kids. You're going to go with Deb this morning. She's going to teach you some fun songs this morning. So all the elementary age kids, and then the Wiggle Worms are going to go over here with Sharon and with Vinny. Nova almost gives her paper away. Almost. It's too cute. So this morning, we are going to continue on with our series on spiritual practices called Return. And we're returning to these ancient practices that have withstood the test of time. They've been handed down to us from Judaism, and we've been reflecting on them since Ash Wednesday and through the Sundays in Lent. And we've talked about fasting, fixed hour prayer, or the daily office. We've talked about Sabbath, sacred meals, pilgrimage or sacred journeys, and each of these spiritual practices really intends us to integrate all the different aspects of ourselves, our spiritual self, our thinking self, our emotional self, our physical bodies, and when we can be integrated by through these practices, it helps us to raise our spiritual awareness, it opens our minds, opens our hearts, and opens us to God. And in return, these contemplative practices also help us to see beyond ourselves. They enable us to see from God's perspective, to see how God might see the world, to become whole and holy people, sort of set apart to see things from God's perspective. Spiritual practices also help us to live with integrity, to be grounded in our actions, in our decision-making, in our relationships, with others and with God. So this morning, we're going to talk about the spiritual practice of giving, and we're going to have what I think, well, for me, it's a hard conversation about money. And not just money, but that's the hard part of the conversation, but how and what are the aspects of giving in our lives, and how does the spiritual practice of giving help to integrate us and ground us in our relationship with God and our relationships with others. So, we're going to dive into the aspects of giving that do make us uncomfortable. I think mostly they make us uncomfortable because they make us vulnerable when we're talking about money. Because conversations about money, I'll be honest, sometimes and some people and some churches have used manipulation around money. I've heard too many stories about people attending churches where leaders have really played on people's fears or emotions to manipulate them into giving. My husband likes to remind me of a new story. Like, he does this all the time. I'm totally calling you out. About, we'll be going somewhere, and he'll say, remember that time where there was that pastor who manipulated his church into giving, and now he's riding around in a private jet, right? I think it's a good reminder for me that how we talk about giving and how we talk about money has to be open and honest. And we cannot be manipulating each other in these conversations. I have to also be honest that for me, talking about money makes me feel vulnerable, and it's hard because so much of self and emotional self is tied up with talking about money. All of us have a very different relationship to money, and often how we view money and how we use money, how we think about money, really comes and is often handed down to us from our own families of origin. And because of that, and because so much of our self-worth can be tied to how we think about money, this becomes a very hard conversation. I know because of the intimacy tied up with giving and conversations about money, it can often leave us to feel vulnerable, and a lot of people don't like to talk about it. So what are the topics that we don't ever like to talk about at a dinner table? Sex, politics, and money. Right? So here, I'm hitting one of the big three. So hopefully we can frame our conversation this morning in an open and honest way so that we can reframe how we think about money and how we think about giving. So everyone's chair had a stack of note cards. Does everyone have a stack of note cards this morning? I just want to make sure. If you don't, we have extras in the back. I just want to make sure everyone has their stack of note cards. So those note cards are going to be for you to write on, because we're going to do some individual reflection this morning. And so I also want to make sure that everyone has a pen. So if you want to dig into your pocket or your purse or how you carry items, if you need a pen, Debbie has extra pens. So just raise your hand and we'll pass out pens. So can I say something funny that I said to Debbie this morning? I said, Debbie, I don't want to put the chairs. I give them out on every single chair because people might walk away with our pens. Like, here I am giving a message about giving, and I'm afraid to give out my pen. I just have to say that because it was funny. I'm like, the irony is not escaping me. All right. We have one more over here that needs a pen. Okay. Thank you. Does everyone have note cards and a pen? Excellent. Thank you. So this morning I'm going to ask a series of reflective questions. And these questions are really intended to help you to invite in the spirit as you think about and reflect on your relationship with giving and how you engage in your own spiritual practice of giving. So on your note cards, I'm going to invite you to either write or draw in whatever way feels safe for you. You can write as much or as little on your cards as feels comfortable to you. And at times, I'm going to invite sharing in the room. And again, share as much as you feel comfortable in sharing. We want this to be a safe space. But most importantly, I'm hoping to create an open space for you to be thinking deeply about your own spiritual practice of giving. So first things first, and I'm going to say this, God doesn't need our money. God doesn't need our money. God doesn't need our money. God isn't in the money business. God is in the loving, healing, transforming business. That's God's work. God's work is saving and forgiving and loving and nurturing. So what God does is God invites us into that business, to be participants with God in loving work in the world. Money, resources, time, gifts, talents are things that we can use to help build those relationships. They're tools. God doesn't need our money to do this. We are invited to participate in a relationship where those resources can be used to further the work of loving, healing, forgiving, and walking alongside others in kingdom work. So this is one of the passages in Scripture which I find oddly funny and amusing. because this is the one passage in Scripture which talks about God putting people to the test. Nowhere else in Scripture does God do this. But God decides that God's going to test the people in their practice of giving. And this is what it says. It says, God says, bring the full tithe into the storehouse so that there may be food in my house, and thus put me to the test. Put me to the test, says the Lord of hosts. See if I will not open the windows of heaven for you and pour down for you an overflowing blessing. God says, I dare you to give. I dare you to give. I dare you, and see what's going to happen. Generosity upon generosity, blessing upon blessing upon blessing is going to flow out for you when you are generous. So I think this is oddly funny because this is the one passage in Scripture where God tests people and God says to them, I dare you. I dare you to give a tithe. Does anybody know what tithe means? It means one-tenth. Right? So God is saying, I dare you to give up one-tenth of your crops, your possessions, your time, your resources. And God says, that's the minimum, by the way. That's serious. That's the minimum, God says. And if you do this, I will bless you. If you give, the more gift you give, the more generous you are, the more you will receive these blessings. And giving is funny that way, God says. The more you give, the more you receive. This brings us to our very first reflection question this morning. On your note cards, or pull out your note cards and your pen, and I want you to think about why or what motivates you to give. So I want you to finish this sentence. I give because. I give because. So thinking about giving and why we give, instead of me sharing a story about why I give, I just thought I would share this film clip. And this is one of my favorite clips. It's from a film called Rudy, and it's just this beautiful moment of giving. So let's watch this together.
What is today?
Friday.
No, I mean
August 23rd, and that is my birthday.
22 big ones.
Pete, it's starting to go by too fast.
Well, I know I didn't have time to wrap it.
Go ahead, I'll shoot it.
Go ahead.
So in the surplus store, I said, that's got to be yours.
This is unbelievable.
Pete, I don't know how I'm ever going to thank you. How's it look?
You were born to wear that check.
You know that era? Is the only head coach in Notre Dame history that encourages walk-on players?
You probably know more about that team than half the players.
I can't wait to get there. Guess how much money I have saved up?
20.
30, 80, 50.
$1,000. That's a good start.
The only one who ever took me serious, Pete.
Well, you know what my dad always said. Having dreams is what makes life tolerable.
I love that clip because it shows how when we know someone and when we invest in our relationship, when we give of our hearts and give to support, encourage, empower someone else, it really has the potential to change someone's life. So thinking about money and giving, I'm curious about how you thought about money or what you learned about money from your own family of origin, because that's usually where we learn about the practice of giving first. So I'd like you to take out the next note card and reflect on this and finish this sentence. In my family growing up, money was... In my family growing up, money was... Family growing up, money was. And now I'm going to invite you to take out your next card. And I'd like you to reflect on and finish this sentence. A gift my family gave me regarding money was a gift my family gave me regarding money. Gave me regarding money. So what I would like you to do is find one other person in the room that you feel safe talking to, and you can share as much as you like about the three questions that we've been reflecting on. I give because... In my family growing up, money was, and a gift my family gave me regarding money. So any of those questions, I'm going to invite you to share with your partner for just 1 minute. 1 minute. So that's 30 seconds a person.
I heard it all.
This is like, I know.
Thank you.
was a gift my family gave me regarding my a gift my family gave me. So is there anything that you learned about yourself that you would like to share? Anything that you discovered in your sharing that you would like to share with the room? Anything you learned or discovered that you would like to share with the room? Okay?
Just the three of us that talked about it, we had three different answers to all three questions.
Exactly. Yes. Three very different relationships. Yes. Others, Jared?
Brian and I realized that money wasn't really talked about, but we learned through example.
You learned through example. Dave?
Yeah. The one about money and conversation of spirit, it was like it was taboo. Like taboo, like we don't talk about that. And yet somehow it was communicated that it's a measure of your worth, how much money you make. And it's kind of weird, like it was two opposite things about money.
Two opposite things about money, yeah. Others, Barb?
So I think I've learned that in the past money didn't hold the value, which value today means it's tangible things. Money in the past brought you joy in ways of a family vacation or a trip to the ice cream store. Even though those were tangible, there were emotional connections that money helped to bring to people.
Yes. Yes. There are a lot of emotions tied up with our money and our giving. Yes. Gabe?
You can only use it on this earth.
You can only use it on this earth. Yes. Yes. Maggie?
I just thought of this now. I think one of the best lessons I learned was from my 8th grade algebra teacher. And I think he was teaching that we had one of those little things that you put a dime in each day. And he said, no wait, this is long ago. he said, give 10%,
yep.
Save 10%, spend the rest with Thanksgiving and praise. Mr. Gobbler.
Mr. Gobbler. Give 10%, save 10%, and use the rest with Thanksgiving
and praise.
Beautiful. Others? Others sharing? Others sharing? Well, thank you so much for the sharing. You know, one of the things that I've discovered as I've opened up with these questions is that all of us have an emotional connection with money in some way, shape, or form. And I think in families, as we're growing up, we learn how to use money. So in my family, what we learned was that there was a transactional relationship with money. So you give what you get. Like, this was very much ingrained in my family of origin. So much so that one Christmas, I remember it was like it was yesterday, I was a sophomore in high school, and everyone decided, that we were going to give a very specific amount. Everyone was going to spend $20 on every other person in the family. And there were six of us. And you could not go over. You could not go over that $20 because, God forbid it, because someone might get hurt. Because if you go out over, then you might owe the other person, or there's like a sense of guilt. And now, we did it out of wanting to have a sense of fairness in my family of origin, but it really backfired. Like, it did not work at all. Because we would always be like, what, did you spend your $20? You know, and we got caught up in that emotionally. It really went bad. So we stopped doing that, thank goodness. And we decided that we were just going to give out of a sense of gratitude. Because we found out and discovered that when we were so busy on keeping everything fair, what it did was it cut us off from the joy and the gratitude and from the relationships with the other members of our family. And as I reflect back to that time, I don't think that we did that out of a bad reason or motivation, but I think that we had this strong sense about giving as being transactional. Like, you give what you get. And I think it was a cultural value, and sometimes I think it's an American cultural value that is just widespread. I think that value of you give what you get and you then give back what you've received is really rooted in consumerism. And this idea that we buy our goods and services and we receive something in return, and that those two things are to be of equal value. So can I share an argument that we have this week?
This is very real.
This is something that we argued about this week, and the goldfish. So I wanted to buy goldfish for Jack's classroom. And Jim said to me, well,
the snack
bowl. I forget. So those little snack bags, the goldfish, and we buy these snacks for the classroom, and we donate them to the classroom for the kids that don't have snacks. And I'm thinking, well, if the kids don't have snacks, let's donate the goldfish to the classroom. Like, these kids need snacks. And she's going, well, these kids are eating all our snacks. We just gave a box of goldfish last week. And where are all those snacks going? I want to know. I want an accounting of where those snacks are going. And I said, remember, these are kids that don't have snacks. I'm telling you, those other parents better be giving those snacks to the classroom too. But how are we running out of snacks? Right? Like, we got caught up in that transactional giving. Right? It's really easy to get caught up on that. Because I think sometimes if we're giving and not receiving, it leaves us vulnerable. If we're receiving and we're not giving, it leaves us in a vulnerable position. It makes us feel open and at risk of being hurt. And that was really at the root and what was underneath. Like, are we getting hurt if we give too many goldfish? Are we hurting another kid if we're... Like, I know that sounds silly, but I think it's like, it's almost like this protective sense. It's almost hard to kind of get underneath this sometimes because we get so caught up in this transactional giving, because I think what it does is it puts us at a risk of when we're not on a level playing field, we can be vulnerable of being hurt in a relationship when the giving is out of balance. There's a danger in this. There's a risk, and there's a danger. The danger is when you start thinking about things transactionally, too, you begin to see everything as transactional. Like, I've walked into church services where people will say, you know, I come to church because I want to be fed with a really good sermon. And I give because I want to receive for my week. And first of all, I'm thinking, oh, I better give a really good sermon. right? And there's nothing wrong with getting your spiritual needs met for the week. But the danger is when it only becomes about your own needs. Church is very, like, right, you see where the vulnerability is in this, right? Because we want to come to church to feel like our spiritual needs are met, but there's something more to coming to church and gathering together as a community. Because it's also having an awareness of the other needs of the people in the room. And when we give, our giving is not transactional, like I'm going to give you a great sermon, I hope, and you're going to be fed for the week. But it's also, the idea is we're here in this together because it's about our relationships with one another, and our giving is rooted and should be transformational and built in our relationships with one another. I think that's what God is talking about in that Malachi passage. That giving is transformational. That giving should be rooted in our relationships with one another, that we can give without expectations on those relationships, that we can give out of a sense of gratitude for what we have and what we've been giving, and that we can be transformed in love when we give generously. Sandy?
Aren't there a lot of people who take that passage and read it very literally and turn it into prosperity gospel, though?
They do.
Because I shared with Phil, I tithed for a while, and then I couldn't. When I tithed, I wasn't getting that prosperity. That's not why I tithed. But now I can't, and I'm heartless.
Right.
But people, I think, do take that, like, oh, you tithe. Like, I can't think of the one speaker. I think he kind of, you know, on top of me really, like, pushes that. You give, you're going to get. And so I think it's a really difficult passage if we don't really look at what you said, the relationships.
Right. I agree, Sammy, because that's been really hard for us because we were tithing and we haven't been able to tithe either. And we haven't been there. And so I think for me, I've had to change my thinking from a transactional, like I'm going to give and get. That's not God. God isn't in the giving and getting business. That's not God. God is in the loving work, transformational. And I think that helps me because when I can give out of what I'm capable of, because you have to have balance in giving. You need to be able to meet your needs. Like, you can't put somebody else at risk. And just because you're giving, it doesn't mean that you're going to get in return, right? That's the danger of the prosperity gospel, and I'm glad you named that. Maricel, you have a question.
Another danger is when some churches make you give out of guilt.
Yes.
If you don't give, you would, like you were saying, like, and when that becomes a guilt that you feel like, oh my God, I have to give money because if not, it's not going to happen. It feels awful. And sadly, at one point in my life, I did experience that. Until I came to realization, like, God is not asking me for anything other than doing the right thing.
Right.
Regardless if I give money to the church or not, if I can give in all the ways, that's the right thing to do. That's what he's expecting from us. It's not, like you say at the beginning, it's not about the money. He doesn't want our money. He wants us to love each other and to be kind to each other. Like Barb said in the children's group this morning, teaching the kids how to be kind to one another. That's a gift that you give it. So, having thoughts about guilt is not good.
I think one of the best things that we can give to one another is time. I think in our culture, in this day and age, I think one of the best things that we can give is our time. And not necessarily our money. I think time and clearing out your busy schedule to make time for another person is one of the best gifts that you can give. I agree with you 100%. I mean, this is often what my schedule looks like. And for the Barn community this Lent, we've been engaging in a devotion called 40 Acts. And one of the devotions this week, if you've been participating in it, was to take a day and clear out your schedule. Did anyone do that this week? Did anyone do that? Rich? Dylan, excellent. How did it work out?
It was great. I didn't know it was math.
So what did you do?
I didn't read that.
Well, beautiful. What did you do?
I spent time with my friend who was visiting here.
Wonderful. Rich, what did you do this week?
Well, it's next week. So,
beautiful. Beautiful. That is a beautiful investment in relationships. So, a second way of giving that's not tied to money is just simply sharing your gifts, your talents, yourself. This is my favorite example of this. But for Alyssa. Thank you. Eddie Coleman. This is Eddie Coleman in Honduras. I do have his permission to share this with you. Eddie has this incredible talent for handshakes and juggling. So Eddie went around and shared this simple talent that he had with all of these kids at the Hearts for Honduras school, and they all fell in love with him. Like rooting your giving in relationships. So think about, what are your unique gifts? What are your unique talents? And how might you be able to share those with others and invest and give generously and with gratitude in your heart to build relationships, to love others, to be involved in healing work in the world? So you know what they are, and I'm going to say, be bold and courageous in sharing your gifts and talents courageously. And so giving, we can give of our money and resources. And not only can we give, but we can find creative ways of getting others to give. So I'm going to just point out the community garden, because I'd like to point out Bob Yoder. This garden is supported by the time of many, many volunteers and the talents of our master gardeners, and it's also supported by our community partners who help to support us with grants. So money can go a long way. Home Depot, the Lower McCundy Township, Emmaus Borough, there are a lot of community partners who give financially to make our community gardens happen, which then in turn grows food to support the work at Daybreak. So there are creative ways that we can think about how we are giving of ourselves and giving to others. So here is what Jesus says about giving. Let's read this together. Don't pick on people, jump on their failures, criticize their faults, unless, of course, you want the same treatment. Don't condemn those who are down. That hardness can boomerang. Be easy on people. You'll find life a lot easier. Give away your life. You'll find life given back, but not merely given back. Given back with bonus and blessing. Giving, not getting, is the way. Generosity begets generosity. So I'm being very conscientious of the time, and we have run way out of time. So I had a couple of more activities for you to think about, and I'm just going to give them to you to reflect on while we also tie our ribbons. So we have been encouraging one another to commit to random acts of kindness this Lent, and you all have ribbons on your chairs, and for those of you that have committed yourselves to random acts of kindness, I'm going to soon invite you to come up and tie your ribbons on our dream catcher for Lent. And as it's growing in color and it's starting to burst with all of these ribbons, you can see the impact and the beauty these random acts of kindness have on the relationships with our people and our community. So these are the things I want to celebrate in terms of your spiritual practice of giving, and these are questions to think about and reflect on this morning. You can take some time and think about what are the assets that you have. And when I say assets, I'm not just thinking monetary assets, but what are the moments in time? What are the gifts that you can share? What are the assets, the gifts, the resources you have that you might be able to share in giving? And on your cards, you can also think about and celebrate what are the gifts that the faith community, that the Barn Faith community shares with you and that you want to celebrate? What are the resources you celebrate in the Barn community? And the last one is, I want to give more to, I want to give more to. So I'm going to invite us into a reflective time. I'm going to invite you to come and tie your ribbons to our dream catcher. And let's be in a prayerful spirit as we do this work together.